I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Jonathan Raymond. After 20 years of not being able to decide whether he was a business development guy or a personal growth teacher, Jonathan stopped trying to figure it out. He's the owner of ReFound, an online training startup that offers good authority training programs for owners, executives, and managers. He's madly in love with his wife, tries not to spoil his daughters, and will never give up on the New York Knicks. Jonathan is the former CEO and chief brand officer of eMyth, where he led the transformation of a global coaching brand and has worked in tech, clean tech, and the nonprofit world after graduating law school in 1998. He lives in Ashland, Oregon, a lovely town that's too far away from a warm ocean. Jonathan, welcome to the show. Great to have you on.
Hey, David. Thanks so much for having me on.
So, Jonathan, let's start off by talking a little bit about growth. Are personal and professional growth two things or one?
You know, for most of my life, I thought that they were two things. And really, in the last 3 or 4 years has been the turning point, my own personal plateau, I'm sure we'll get into it, of realizing that far more than I think we realize, personal and professional growth are really one and the same.
And how did you come to realize that?
I came to it at sort of the leadership bottom point in my life. As I was, as you mentioned in my bio, I was running a coaching company as its CEO and then chief brand officer. And I was, you know, doing business by day and running the business and, you know, all the things that every, you know, executive struggles with. And then I was really, you know, focused on my own personal growth and spiritual journey at night and on the weekends. And what I didn't appreciate was the degree to which those two journeys were separate, even though I was trying and my intention was to bring them together. But I was still in my mind, I was still holding them as two separate tracks. So I was always, you know, working on myself as a leader and then working on myself as a person. And even though theoretically I was doing both of those things at the same time, they were never really integrated. And in 2013, 2014, I really just hit my own limit where I had lost connection with who I wanted to be and the kind of leader that I wanted to be. And it was impacting my marriage. It was impacting my friendships. It was impacting my health. And I thought, you know, something is wrong here. What am I missing?
You know, it's interesting how this kind of, I guess, these causes of stress and fact that things are not working the way we hope that they should be working, they kind of build up over time. And then all of a sudden we get to the point where we reach a limit and we like, we can't take anymore. And and then we know we need to do something. And often we think, oh, I probably should have done something a long time ago. But what is it that you did?
Well, I cried a lot. I was kind of at a loss. You know, I thought, you know, all of the tools and strategies and things that I was doing. I mean, I was also leading seminars and workshops for business leaders and feeling like a fraud, where I felt like the ideas and the things that I was talking to people about doing, they weren't working for me. They were working in some ways. It wasn't 100-0, but they weren't working to the degree that I at least thought that they were supposed to. And so the pivot for me was really a decision that I made to change the way that I was leading my team, and in particular, to change the agreement between myself. You know, I was a C-level executive, but as far as I'm concerned, C-level executives are managers too. And I decided to make the personal growth of my employees the starting point for how I was going to manage my week and how I was going to lead projects and what I saw my role to be. And it's an epiphany that I would not have come to without my wife's support in that, who, you know, she said, you know, helped me find, you know, what if it's just one journey? What if you could bring everything that you care deeply about in, you know, in your personal growth journey and the things that you've learned works and the thing that think that work and the things that don't. And what could you bring that to bear in the actual day-to-day, moment-to-moment conversations that you're having with your team and helping them to do the work that you need from them and to grow. And so that was really the journey that I embarked upon about 3 years ago.
Yeah. And it's great to have somebody who has your back and can support you like you just described with your wife.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, she's smarter than me, and I consider myself to be a pretty intelligent guy, but like all of us as leaders, you know, we don't see it. And I love what you said before, because, you know, one of the things that I work with many leaders on is, you know, we're all kind of superheroes in our world in one form or another. We get so much done. We're covering so much ground when we're just one person. And it's often we lose sight of how much ground we're trying to cover as one human being with, we have limits. And, you know, we have this slogan that we've thrown around Refound, which is more Yoda, less Superman. And there's this pivot where we realize that, you know, and sometimes it takes hitting that wall of realizing I had no idea how thin I was stretched across my life in all the different domains of my life. And in those moments where we have that, you know, sort of the classic journey where we have that opportunity to say, what just happened? Why, how did I get here? Where did I go wrong? And how can I pivot and choose a different outcome from here forward?
Yeah, and the truth is we can choose. We need to be able to ask ourselves those questions. And often we need somebody from the outside who helps identify what the questions are and can perhaps and walk with us as we try to find the solution. So I think your story is a very, very real one and very common. Mm. And what kind of result did you see after you made that pivot?
It was fascinating to me. You know, the things that I had wanted my team, both, you know, professionally and you know, I think everybody has this sense where, you know, you work with people and you think they have another gear that they, you know, and you work really hard and maybe you go to retreats and seminars and whatever other methodologies you try. And all of a sudden, people just started showing up as a better version of themselves. And they were taking on ownership, right? This kind of abstract concept of ownership. Like we know it when we feel it, when somebody really owns their role. And they just started doing that in a different way. And I found myself pulling myself out of, you know, so many of the meetings that I realized I didn't need to be in, and asking them and leaving them with more of the discomfort, honestly, of having to figure things out for themselves and not being the backstop as I had grown so accustomed to being for so long.
Mm. And where does the personal growth fit into this?
So for me, where personal growth fits in is that there are, when I look at organizations, and this I wrote in Good Authority about these five buckets of behavior, where to me they're not personal or professional, they're human, and they're around time management, they're around being responsive to communication, keeping agreements, they're around being able to say I don't know when you don't know something, they're around being able to embrace a mistake, right? So not oops, I'm sorry, that will never happen again. But, oh man, I didn't know that I did that. I need to do some thinking about why that happened. And then the fifth bucket was around risk-taking, was people who either don't take enough risks, which is sometimes, but also people who take too many. And there were these patterns that I noticed both on my teams directly, other parts of our organization and our clients, and clients that I started to work with. I said, these are the behaviors that I think take teams apart. Those are the morale-degrading, team-degrading behaviors. But these are, you know, if you help somebody become a responsive communicator, you're helping them with a life skill. You're helping them become a better professional. And of course, you're getting more of the result that you want. So those were the areas that I focused on. The micro behaviors is what we've called them in the book. The things that we see all the time as managers and leaders as we go through our day, and we mostly don't intervene. We mostly let it go. We kind of hope and pray that the behavior will change or grow, and it doesn't. That's where I started to intervene and see, you know, this is where personal and professional growth come together.
Yeah. And I can tell you, reflecting on your description, Jonathan, I spent many years in leadership and management roles before I started my own business in 2006. And I've now worked with lots of clients on these issues. And yes, I have seen these issues personally as a manager. And I know when I've addressed them, it's made a huge difference. When I haven't addressed them, they don't go away. They just get worse. And as a consultant working with clients, when these issues are not addressed, they get worse and they really impact the organization, sometimes really big time. I mean, I've seen some real negative outcomes with regard to how an organization delivers on its promise to its customers. And if internally and also between the organization and the customer, if time management and response to communication aren't handled well, they tend to just blow up in your face.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's great. And tell me a little bit about what it is that you do now and how it's changed your own professional life and what you do with your time.
Yeah. So for me, I these days, you know, I think of myself as a micro interventionist, you know, in the realm. And I think we'll probably talk a little bit about consulting and coaching and sort of this world that we live in. My feeling is leaders need sentences, not sessions. And so I have a seminar that I do where I go on site and I work with leaders, people managers across an organization in person. It's a really, you know, it's fun, it's lighthearted, but we really get into the strategy of how do you actually have a meaningful conversation? And most importantly, how do you start it? How do you start a conversation in a way that's going to lead to the result that you want, where people are less likely to get defensive, to make excuses, to blame the system, where they respond to what you're saying in a way that says, oh, thanks for pointing that out. Like I wouldn't have seen it that way. Thank you for mentioning that. And so I spend a lot of my time these days in rooms with organizational leaders. I do a lot of work on the West Coast, but I'm all over the place these days. And then I'm building an organization. You know, we're early stages on our company, but building a what I like to think of as a new kind of advisory service where we help leaders find not an hour and a half session that goes into, you know, all kinds of different territories, which I find are not that helpful most of the time. But what's the next thing that you can say to move this conversation forward? And so I'm in a lot of kind of product design conversations and just, you know, traveling around and talking with people and doing my share of podcasts and guest articles and fun things like that.
Mm. And is your intervention as an advisor, do these end up being very short sessions?
Yes. Well, either, you know, sometimes it's an email, right? Sometimes it's well, how else could you phrase that? Or, you know, how do they respond, right? Like I keep looking for ways, like how can I dial back? Because I think that and there is a lot of wonderful coaches out there. I'm not casting aspersion on the people behind it, but I think we've set ourselves up for a kind of disempowering relationship when we spend an hour and a half. You know, I was talking with somebody this morning and, you know, it was a 15 minute thing. And I could tell, like, we got over 15 minutes and it was too long. It was too much information. There was not enough life in the middle of this for this woman who's a brilliant, amazing woman. She needed to go and do some things. And beyond 15 minutes, and I would say even 15 minutes was probably too long. It was probably more like 5 minutes. So we're trying to design a product, a service for companies that is as short, as little as possible, just enough, right? Just like, you know, so that we're practicing what we preach. We don't want managers to sit down with an employee for an hour or an hour and a half talking about everything that's going on with their life. We want them to help move the conversation forward. And so that's what we're trying to design. So so those two things are in integrity.
What a great model.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, I love it. I'm also thinking about, as a leader and a manager and as a consultant, what kinds of interactions have I found over the course of my career have worked best? And lots of times it's these very short interactions that just move the needle forward. So I'm totally in agreement with you. And Jonathan, so now speaking about advisory services and help, what do you see going on in the coaching industry?
You know, it's interesting. You know, it's exploded, right? So there's so many paradigms that I don't know about, but I've certainly seen a bunch. And running a coaching company that had a global footprint, I got my share of experience. You know, what I think is that there is a whole world of well-intentioned, big-hearted, mostly, you know, experienced people who want to help. And at the same time, I think we're setting up help in some really disempowering ways. And so that's really my frustration or my criticism of the way that we're acting as coaches. And, you know, I talk with clients, you know, a lot of my clients are in the Bay Area and Silicon Valley. And, you know, people say, hey, well, we have this, you know, someone made a proposal for, you know, a coaching agreement and, you know, it's 6 months and we're working with a couple of executives and, you know, it's this six-figure number. And I thought, well, you know, I understand from the perspective of hourly rates for a top executive coach, I get it. But from the perspective of organizational health, that's insanity. To spend that much money on a couple of people at the top, it reinforces the us versus them between leadership and the team. It doesn't break it down. And so that's what I would love for us to be doing as an industry more. I would love for us to get more creative and find ways to serve the whole organization. You know, almost every organization that I talk with, they say, look, you know, we want help. To like, how do we get people to give feedback up the organization? How do we get people to share what they think and feel? It's certainly not going to happen from a whole bunch of CEO coaching. It's not going to work because you're not giving those people the skills that they need. And so, you know, there's an explosion of technology, people technology. There's all kinds of great stuff. I have some wonderful partners in the tech space. And I just want people to be sober. Right? Like, technology is not going to solve these problems. These are interpersonal issues. These are organizational dynamics. This is about starting and having meaningful conversations. And technology can't do that. And which is good news for people who are leaders around the world, because it's one of the only roles that is not going to be automated, because it can't be. So unless Elon Musk really puts his mind to it, maybe it can be. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And just to be clear, can you repeat what that role is?
The role is seeing yourself as someone to grow other people, right? To be able to listen and ask questions and understand what they're not saying, not just what they're saying, but what they're not saying. And that role to me is the highest, not just the highest value, but it's the most rewarding work I've ever done as a professional. It was, you know, I'm fascinated by the mechanics of great business. I know enough to be dangerous in a bunch of different areas of the business, but that role of facilitator, right? To facilitate growth of one human being, of a team of 10 people, of a department of 200, that's such rewarding work. And when you make the pivot as a leader and you realize just how valuable you are, way more valuable to the organization than you think you are, when you embrace some of these dynamics, that's the shift in the role.
Yeah, no, it can be very powerful. And Jonathan, what kinds of models have you seen that work better than hourly coaching to executives?
I don't think there's a lot of options out there, honestly. I mean, I think, you know, what we're doing is new. I think there are some organizational design firms that are thinking about things in a holistic way. You know, I don't know a lot of great options out there, because I think the challenge is in the business model, right? The challenge is how do you create a business that scales you're not trading time for dollars, right? It's going back to my Emith heritage. I'm trying to create a business like a lot of people that, you know, if it's just based on how many hours Jonathan Raymond has in the day, well, then I've just created a job for myself. And I went into business to create a business. So I think that's where the challenge that a lot of people are facing is. I've seen some people do some really nice things around, you know, creating culture templates and leadership, you know, training, some train the trainer models I think are interesting. And I think different, you know, there's a lot of good voices in this industry. And I think people resonate, they'll find the ones that they resonate with.
Mm. And Jonathan, what have you seen that might be valuable in a peer support model or community-based model of support, as opposed to one-on-one, particularly one-on-one that's focused on just the leadership sector of an organization?
We do a lot of group work with clients after our initial seminar, where we'll have, like, you know, 15 people managers who are in kind of a part of the business, and we'll get together once a month and have conversations. And to me, groups are so powerful, right? It's such a powerful model. First of all, it's more affordable for the business, which I like. And it, you know, we learn so much from watching somebody else struggle. And, you know, positive struggle. And what I like to do is, you know, I try to step out of the facilitator or coach role as much as I can, and, you know, turn the mic over to other participants on the call. And, you know, I like some of the models, you know, you and I were talking before around, like, you know, Weight Watchers and AA, or there's some of those models where, you know, really, you know, it sounds cheesy, but it takes a village, right? We need peers. We need, you know, I like to think of it as like the benevolent uncle or the benevolent aunt. That's a lot of the role we play, where, you know, we're coming in and we're offering like a perspective. Like, you know, it's like, sometimes it's hard to hear from your parents. You might listen to your uncle when he says, well, I think what your mother means is this. And you go, oh, yeah, well, totally, I get it. Right. So a lot of times, I think in the group model, if you have somebody that the community trusts, you know, that's a really big thing for us. We look for organizations where we can build trust, where they say, hey, you know, we're responsible. We in the organization are responsible for changing the conversation, but we trust ReFound that, you know, when we get stuck or when we want to advance the conversation, we have a voice in here who we can ask for just a little bit of feedback.
Mm. Yeah, no, in a group model, trust is really important. Vulnerability is really important. Vulnerability doesn't happen unless there's trust. Individuals having humility is important. Individuals, the culture of the group being one where you're only allowed to share your own personal experiences as examples to give when somebody else poses a challenge is another one that I've seen a lot of. So it's not about me preaching to you when you have a problem. It's like, oh, I understand what your problem is. here's something I did in another situation that you may find useful.
Nice.
Right, which is different. And I wondered also, have you seen this kind of approach working where you have multiple organizations as part of a group as opposed to a group within an organization?
Yeah, we've done some of that. You know, it can be a little bit challenging, but you know, one of the things that I think is very, you know, to some of the things that you talked about before, one of the things that's really meaningful for people is to be able to experience that you can be critical about the place you work without being negative, right? You can make an observation about a dynamic in your culture or on your team or something that's going on. You can be open and transparent and vulnerable, like, hey, you know, I don't think we're great at this thing over here. And you could do that with people in another organization, and you have an experience of like, oh, it's actually okay. I don't have to protect anything. There's nothing to defend. And so I think it can work. Sometimes I run across organizations who are worried about confidentiality, things like that. So there can be some challenges there. But when you can overcome those, I think it's a very powerful way of working.
Yeah. Well, certainly, there's the concept of the mastermind for people who are in the top leadership roles. And when they get together in a mastermind setting, the idea is that there is complete confidentiality and people share their stories of all kinds of things that happen in their companies. With people who are generally, it's interesting. I've had some guests where I've talked about this, and some people say it's good to do this in a non-competitive setting so that you feel comfortable opening up. And I've had other people who said it's okay to be in a room full of your competitors talking about these things because we all learn from one another and we all do things a little differently.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can tell you from my own personal experience, I've always been part of some kind of association that's related to what I do. So I am in a room with my competitors and you think about professional associations as an example.
Yeah.
Right. You go to a conference and you're in a facility filled with other people who do what you do. So yes, they're all your competitors, but why do people go to those kind of association conferences? Because they want to share stories with their colleagues. They want to learn from one another. And very often, since we all do things slightly differently, there's an opportunity to collaborate sometimes.
Yes.
So Jonathan, I wondered if you might be able to share a story about somebody you know who's done a remarkable job smashing plateaus.
You know, I was thinking about this question when you asked me earlier, and I think it's a small example, but I love it. So I'm going to tell the story. I don't even know his name, but he's the founder or one of the founders of a technology company called Zapier. You know, I geek out on this kind of stuff, but they make a kind of a technology connector tool. So if you have a couple of pieces of technology and they don't talk to one another, you can create a Zap with a Zapier tool. It's a really neat thing. And I was listening to him on a podcast or I can't remember what it was, interview. And he started talking about their interview process. And they're, you know, fast growing startup. And he said, you know, we started interviewing people and he said, you know, those jobs where, you know, they're those jobs that don't involve any customer service. Well, we don't have any of those jobs. So everybody here does customer service. I do customer service. This is the essence of who we are. And I just thought it was a really cool example. And I translate that into our world, you know, in the way that we work with clients and help them find a version of that. But I just thought, you know, he's doing some cool things around, I don't know him. I've never met him, but I just think I think they're in Minnesota, I believe. And they're not in the Silicon Valley, you know, kind of world. And they're doing some really cool things and growing a technology company outside of some of the, I wouldn't even say traditional, but some of the commonly conceived ways that people grow tech companies. I think they're doing some really interesting things and they have a great product.
Wow. Sounds really fascinating. And Jonathan, what is coming up in the near future from you? You said your company is relatively new. What are you working on now? What do we have to look forward to?
I'm just doing a little bit of product design, but mostly I'm out on the road. You know, I'm out, you know, talking with, I love sales conversations. I love being able to talk with people about, you know, what's going on in their organization and the struggles they're facing, seeing if there's opportunities to help. So, you know, I spend a lot of time just talking with CEOs, talking with, you know, chief people officers and HR leaders. I have been invited to a lot of, to facilitate dinner conversations, which I love to do. So that is one, sometimes I joke if I could, you know, make a living facilitating dinners, that would be really fun. So
and you would get fed too.
Yeah, you get food, maybe a nice glass of wine. It's a good gig. So I'm really just, you know, working with clients and looking for co-conspirators, you know, people who, you know, we're a young organization, but, you know, organizations who are interested in the work that we're doing, to talk with them and build relationships, because, you know, that's, you know, the kind of work that we're doing is, you know, as you know, these conversations, you know, even if we run the world's greatest one-day workshop, it takes time. You know, it takes time to build trust in an organization, to unpack some of the old things that are there. So that's what I spend my days talking with people and having conversations like this one.
Sounds great. And how can listeners learn more about you and follow you?
So that we have a ton of stuff on our website at refound.com. So that's like rebound with an F. So you can go to our homepage. You can also go to refound.com/resources. And we have some tools. They're all free tools on that page. Accountability tools, one-on-one meeting guide tools, some quizzes around, you know, how do you step into an authority role in a good way. So those are the two main places that you can find me. The book is available on Amazon. The book's available everywhere. Those are the best places to find me.
That's great.
And people can always reach out to us by email, just hello@refound.com. If you have a question about anything in this conversation, we read every email and we respond to every email.
That's great. And can you repeat the title of the book?
The book is called Good Authority, How to Become the Leader Your Team is Waiting For. And it was published by Idea Press in fall 2016.
That's great. All right. So listeners, go out and get a copy of the book. Check out Jonathan's website. And there are lots of great resources there. So I encourage you to do that. Jonathan, it's been great having you today on Smashing the Plateau. I think what you're doing is really cutting edge and badly needed in lots of organizations. So I look forward to hearing more great stories from you in the near future.
Thanks so much. Thanks for letting me come on, and also just appreciate your perspective. And I love that I get a chance to learn more about the work you're doing.
Great. Well, thanks again, Jonathan. Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.